We left off last time, maybe the last line of Shimon and Aleph, and the Gemara tells two stories, they're really the same story, that the Amar, three lines from the bottom, last two words, the Amar Rabba Barachana, Ki Avazlinam Basreid Rabbi Yochanan. He says, when we used to go with Rabbi Yochanan, Ki Avazlinam Elabes HaKise, when he would want to enter the bathroom, Ki Havanakit Sifra Dagadita, when he would be holding a Sefer Agada, which is an odd thing in its own right, you're not really supposed to write down Torah Shebal Peh. Sefer Agada is exactly as it suggests. It's Midrash. It's not written Torah. It's not Torah Shebichtav. But if he had a Sefer Dagadata, Havayahivlan, he would give us to hold it when he went to the bathroom, because you're not allowed to take it in. They have a Naka Tfilin, they'll have a Yahivlan. When he had tefillin, he wouldn't give it to them because Amar Hol b'Sharunu Rabbanan, since there's a way to take the tefillin to the bathroom, namely either to wrap them up. So then he said, Ninturan, let them guard us. So there are a couple of points that I wanted to make about this. Yes. I want to talk about that. Let the tefillin guard us. But I also want to talk about, firstly, the issue with the Sefer Agadata, not the writing it down, but the fact that you couldn't take it in. There is an issue of taking in something that has Kedusha and writing on it, Divrei Torah, into a bathroom. If it's not, now the difference between the Sefer Agadata and the Tefillin is the Tefillin are actually covered. In other words, the Tefillin, the Shem Hashem and the Divrei Torah are actually the Parshiyos, which are covered up. So the Batin and the Ritzuos and the Snaps have Kedusha. They're what we would call Tashmishi Kedusha. The Kedusha itself is the Shem Hashem that's inside. But when we can be more lenient to some degree by tefillin because the Shem Hashem is covered over. But it's safer Agadita when you have Divrei Torah themselves, so they're not covered over, so that's a problem. It's an issue that has come up. I have tried to impress upon. So maybe the only question is whether or not given that the pages are, this is not really a covering the same way. It's not wrapped all the way around, right? Your pages are exposed on the side. If you had like a little, like sometimes, you know, books come in these like little boxes, fancy, like facsimiles will come in box. So that would be considered a covering. I'm not sure that the book, the jacket itself is covered. If you had it in a backpack, that's a different question.
Just have a knapsack, and
The knapsack is a different story. We're going to talk about also the fact that it depends upon whether something is the normal covering or not the normal covering. But I think for tefillin anyway, I think it's clear with the tefillin, that they wouldn't be a problem if in some type of case. Because we've seen already cases, like you can go into you don't wrap them in your baguette because you're afraid it's gonna fall. So you hold them in your hand instead, maybe in the baguette in your hand. But if you have it in its own, and one of the things we'll also see is that the case itself that the tefillin normally, a tefillin bag that it's normally in, doesn't have the same power of hefsek that a bag that's not intended for. In other words, a knapsack's much better than even the tefillin bag itself.
The bag is always in a bag.
What's that?
The bag is always in a bag, which is usually another bag.
That's before getting into the knapsack. So I think usually for most of us, there are one or two bags between the tefillin and the thing, but it's not, but I think it doesn't matter how many coverings you have, if they're all the normal kis hamiyuchad, it's still like one. We will see that eventually.
What about if you put some in your pocket?
So that would be the same thing. You know, if your pocket is not a covering that's intended for the tefillin, so that's going to work better. Well, eventually we'll get to see all these things, but in this context, one of the problems that comes up, I assume it's not only in Camp Stone, and I try to impress upon Sevet there that when they make their shirts, you know, it's a very central part of the experience, having the tzevet shirt that's made of, even before the campers arrive, that you shouldn't be putting Divrei Torah on them. You don't put sukkah on them for multiple reasons. But the first and foremost reason is that you can't go to the bathroom in it, right? Unless you're going to have to put a sweatshirt on top of it. That's not going to happen. So in general, we don't like the idea of writing sukkim on things, on wedding invitations, because they get thrown in the garbage. So we can talk about that. Technically, Technically, is an interesting question, but it's not appropriate to write it on the shirt, because then you really should walk into the bathroom.
What happens? Sorry to digress. What happens if it's part of a puzzle?
So if it's only two words, that's one thing. Three words already is enough as a part of a puzzle that it shouldn't be used. I mean, the more interesting question you have to ask is when you have, like if you were to, you might use an expression in Asia's Chayla Teres Baila, which you're not really necessarily using as you're quoting a pasuk, but you're using a title which is based upon. If I say Shomer Nafsho Yirchak Mehem, am I quoting a pasuk or am I using a melitza, an expression which means, someone who's a fatilius will be careful about these things. So, but three words is usually the standard thing that Gemara says requires sirtur. If you're going to write three words of a pasuk, then you require drawing, inscribing the lines when they write a Sefer Torah. So two words, I don't know what two words you're going to put on there, but, you could have, Holech MS, I don't know, whatever it would be. So then you can put that would not be considered, I think that wouldn't be considered an issue. Okay. So that's point number one. Point number two, which I think is more interesting on a conceptual frame, is the idea that this story that's going to be the same story right after this, he wanted the tefillin to guard him. Now, the truth is, when you look at the word tefillin is, in English, is phylactery, which comes from the Greek phylaxo, which means to watch, or to guard. So obviously, at least in the, at some point in time, and this Gemara reflects that as well, there was some sense that the tefillin was some type of a protection. Now, in this case, it's very not Maimonidean, as I'll explain in a moment, but in this case, the tefillin, was clearly not guarding someone from sin. That was not what the concern was. The guarding was from protection. Protection from whatever you might need protection for. You're in a vulnerable situation when you're going to the bathroom, so the tefillin would serve as some type of protection. Yes. So there is a passage in the Rambam. There's a passage in the Rambam where people apparently used to write names of angels inside the mezuzah on the writing side. And the Rambam goes a little bit berserk. The Rambam says that it's not only do they hassle the mezuzah, but they take this mitzvah gedola, which is Yichud Hashem, the Yirasso, the Avasso, it's acknowledging the unity of God, the obligation to fear and to love God, and they turn it into a kameya lahanoya satsman, into an amulet, right? Really just for their own benefit, their own protection. Now, the truth is we do write on the back. We don't write inside. We write on the back, but we actually write, and I don't know why we do this, we write the Shemos of Hashem, but we write it not with the actual shame, but we write Kuzu something Kuzu. Kuzu is the Yudkei Vav, shame of Yudkei Vavkei, except that you add one letter to each. So the Hays become Vavs, the Yud becomes a Tuf, and the Vav becomes a Zion. So Yudkei Vavkei becomes Kuzu. And I think we do maybe the same thing for Elohim. Maybe we do the same thing. I don't remember, but we do write on the back of the Zuzes. It's useful. I have no idea. I've never looked into it. I just know that's what they do. It is very useful when you want to make a mezuzah has to be upright. It's possible if you put the cloth, if you turn it upside down. So it does make it easy to tell on the outside. It also has another function, which is the real reason you have to check a mezuzah is the concern that it's rotted away. So if you can see, if you pull the mezuzah out, and most of the time when I put them, we wrap them in plastic. You typically roll the mezuzah, you put the mezuzah like a little plastic baggie. You may cut it a little, cut the plastic away, you roll it, and then you just tape it over. And if you can see the letters showing through, and they look to be in fine condition, you don't really actually have to unwrap the mezuzah, because the ksat hasn't rotted away. So it does serve those two functions. I don't think that either of those were the reason why. I don't think they used to wrap the mezuzahs in plastic. That's probably why they didn't probably last anywhere near as long. I've checked outside mezuzahs on my house that have been there for now 25 years, and they don't look any worse than they were, because they really, they're not in a case, but they're wrapped in the plastic.
Have a leader?
Yeah.
Why would you use a baggie as opposed to saran wrap? And how do you fit a baggie into the bathroom?
Saran.
So I'll just tell you, there's no halacha as such, Marshall. I would just tell you that I find it very easy. The sofer actually showed me this years ago when I bought my first mezuzah. If you take like a small sandwich bag, you have to cut off, cut away the, Ziploc, you'll cut away the top. And then you basically, depending on your mezuzah, it covers most of the width. You just roll it in that. You don't have to worry about I would think it's harder to do with saran wrap. And you just roll the mezuzah up into a very, very tiny thing. You can fold over the last part of the plastic. You just put a piece of tape around it. It rolls up very tiny. And, it's very easy.
For what it's worth, Rav Huttner always used snack bags because they were smaller than sandwich bags. Just saying.
Okay, Marshall. Enough.
What kind of bag was it?
No. You're putting too much credence, okay? Okay. So it is kind of interesting, though, that here there is a Gemara in Bava Metzia that talks about the prophylactic nature of mezuzah. The Gemara says it, you're not allowed to take the mezuzah down when you leave your house if another Jew is going to move in there. And the Gemara, talks about bad things that happen. And here the Gemara describes it, and mezuzah, I don't know what the Greek name for Greek word for mezuzah was, but Tfillin actually reflects this particular approach that somehow it provides some type of protection. The Rambam, and I think I would more inclined to this. I don't know about Marshall. Marshall might not incline to this interpretation. I am more inclined to say that the Tfillin does guard us, that it guards us from sin. The purpose of Tfillin and mezuzah, which we often forget about, is that it's a reminder of God's presence whenever you enter a room. Yes, Rabbi Lipstein, I know that seems obvious, but clearly many of our co-religionists for a very long time have at least added another layer to it, that it's protection not only for our souls and a reminder, but also that it provides some type of protection. So,
Rabbi, I guess you just said this, but it's the original prophylaxis.
Yes. Yes. That's phylacteries. I
mean, that's the word.
That's the word comes from.
That's the word, yeah.
Kids are explicitly about that. And then
about remembering God, you mean?
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's true, but I think Pshuto Shemikra is very clear that you talk into Beit Torah, b'shivtecha b'beisach l'adchavda u'kshartam l'yaseidach v'yitosme. It's clear that Rashbam has an interpretation in Parshas Bo. It apparently, Ibn Ezra doesn't cite him by name, but he cites it and rejects his approach. But Rashbam, in Parshas Bo, where it says, v'yala otza yachal l'zikaron peninecha, so Rashbam says it's metaphorical, not actually the mitzvah, at least there. He says, Pshuto Shemikra, is that it's metaphorical, it's not the actual, actual object, because its purpose is, it should be, is that Torah is always, engraved on your head, on your heart, you're always remembering. Don't worry, Rashbam put on tefillin, probably put on Rashi tefillin, not Ravina Tan tefillin, but it's not that Rashbam didn't wear tefillin, but clearly, that Pshuto Shemikra certainly represents what the purpose of the pshat in the mitzvah is. But it comes to take on this other, if you'd like to believe mitzvahs should protect us, they, unfortunately, we know that doesn't always protect us. Okay, let's see.
10 years ago, a terrorist attack in Mahalot. A terrorist went into a girl's school and murdered 19. And a couple of days later, some rabbi went in to the school, checked all the mezuzahs, and came back with the report that the mezuzahs were all perfect. And I said, if that's why that terrorist killed 19 girls by the Torah, then we need a different God. It's not,
Look.
I know there's a tradition in
but how many terrorist attacks have there been in places in the church?
And there's a
kosher. Yeah. Maybe kosher was used to cause that terrorist attack.
Consistency, you would like? I understand. Yes. Look, it happens to be, there's a particular group of Jews who are tremendous Ave Israel. I won't mention them, on recording, who they do tremendous things for Kal Yisrael. But like if you're having some tzaras, the first thing they want to come do is first they want to kash your kale and make sure you drink only Kol Yisrael, and they want to check your mezuzahs. So yeah, okay.
Rabbi Meir once wrote in response to a question. The question was, something terrible happens, should you check the mezuzahs? By all means, you should check the mezuzahs, and you should check your tefillin, and you should check your halachas neros that you're doing it on time, and check your
Shmiras,
the Pashuras. Check your religious behavior, sure. That's
right.
Always important to check.
Okay. So anyway, so that's what Rabbi Yochanan, he just takes the tefillin in with him. And then the Gemara tells a similar story on the top of Chaskim Amadeh. Amar Rava, he has Hava Zinam Basred Ram Nachman. He have a Nachat Sifra Dagadita Yahivlan. He have a Nachat Tefillin Loyavlan. Amar Hol B'Sharuna Rabbanon. Vinteron, let us regard us. Same story. Okay. So now, the Gemara continues, going back to the question of wearing tefillin and doing certain things. Gemara says the following, Tanu Rabbanan, lo yocheis adam tefillin biyado, the Sefer Torah b'zerah v'yispala. You're not allowed to be holding Sefer Torah or tefillin in your hand when you daven. The concern is that it's going to distract you because you're going to be afraid that you're going to drop them. The lo yashkin bohemayim, this probably refers to only the tefillin. So you're not allowed to urinate while wearing the tefillin. The Gemara is going to talk about that. Velo yishan bohem lo shinas keva velo shinas arai. You're not allowed to sleep when you're wearing the tefillin, either shinas keva or shinas arai. Now, the concern with shinas, the concern with both cases, is potentially shema yofiyach bahem, that a person is not going to be able to guard their own body, they're going to, pass gas in the process, and that's a violation of kedushas tefillin. And when they're asleep, they don't have an awareness to control those bodily functions. Now, there is a separate question I think the Rush asked, which is very interesting. He says that we know that you're not allowed to be misiach bas from your tefillin. Right? It says, v'hayal mitzvah by the tits. I think I actually quoted this in a drasha at some point years ago here. V'hayal mitzvah tamid. The tzitz has to be on the Kohen Gadol's forehead, tamid. So the question is, what does tamid mean? So one interpretation is the tzitz only works when it's on the Kohen Gadol's forehead. When I say it only works, the tzitz only works to achieve certain types of kapara for kachim that was done slightly wrong for tuma issues. The tzitz only works when the Kohen Gadol's wearing it. If the Kohen Gadol is taking a break and he's not wearing the tzitz, then it's not mechaper on the kachim that got messed up. And that's one shita. And the other shita said, no, the tzitz is the rasa always. It doesn't matter whether the Kohen Gadol is wearing it. That whatever the halacha is by kachim, the halacha is by kachim. But what is vayom, it's called tamid. So it has to be, you're not allowed to be misiach das from the tzitz when the Kohen's wearing it. So when the Kohen's, as opposed to all the other big day kahuna, not sure about the Urim Batuma, but they didn't have that in Bayesheni at least, as opposed to all those big day kahuna, so the tzitz has Shem Hashem on it. It says Kodesh Lashem. So therefore, because it has, all the big day kuna have kedusha, but this is an unusual kind of kedusha, Kohen Gadol cannot sort of lose track of its tzitz on its head. So the Gemara then says it's a kal v'chomer from tzitz to tefillin. If tzitz has only one shema shem in it, right? You write on it kodesh l'ashem. So tefillin, which has tons of shemos, so of course you're not allowed to be misiach das when you're wearing the tefillin. So I think it's the Rush who asks, well then, why do we even have to talk about Shinas Kevin Shinas Arai? The Gemara is not here, but elsewhere it talks about the concern of Shema Yafiyah, that you're not going to have your body in a proper state. So you're not allowed to sleep in it because that's a Hesech Hadas. You're no longer thinking about having the tefillin on your head. So he says something very interesting. He writes that tefillin, the Hesech Hadas is not that you have, that your mind always has to be on the tefillin. It's that your mind can't be engaged in havle ha'olam, the stress of the world, and the nonsense of the world. So he says that, well, so that means when you're awake, you can't be thinking about it and talking about other things that are appropriate. But when you're asleep, you're not thinking about those things. I would have raised the question whether that's actually 100% true, given that what people think about when they're sleeping, or dream about when they're sleeping, are the things they think about when they're awake. But that's what the Rush says. Okay. So that's what the Brisa says, that you can't hold these, you can't hold them while you're davening. You can't be mashkin when wearing tefillin. And you can't sleep when wearing tefillin. Shinas keva, shinas arai. So, Amar Shmuel, sakin umaos uka'ara v'kikar, hare enu kayotze bohen. The same thing is true if you're holding a knife. It doesn't mean you have a knife in your pocket, but it means you're actually holding the knife in your hand. Or you're holding money. Or you're holding a pot with food in it, or a loaf of bread that you don't want to fall on the ground and it will get ruined. So all of these things you're not supposed to hold when you're davening your amida, because you're going to be distracted. Okay. Amar Rava, this is where it gets a little interesting, a little bit more detailed than I would be interested in, but I guess it's important. Amar Rava Amar Sheshes Les Hilchosaki Hamasisa.
I'm so sorry. What line are we on, please?
We are now on the first wide line on Chafkim Alamadez.
Okay, thank you.
Amar Avraham Shesha, Les Hilchasaki Hamas Nisa. Debe Shamahi, this Mishnah, and Gemara tell us right now which part of the Mishnah they're talking about, but it's referring to Velo Yashkin Bohemayim. This Mishnah is based Shamai's opinion, not based Hillel. Ki Beis Hillel, Hashta Beis Hakisei Kavu Ashari, Now, this is what's complicated. We learned a Gemara. Give me one second. I'll come back and retranslate. I want to sort of set the table for this discussion. We had a discussion on the previous Amud we read last week that clearly if a person has to defecate without Rishon, what the Gemara will call Gidolin as opposed to Ketanim, so they're not allowed to be wearing tefillin when they do that. And the whole debate was, where do you put the tefillin? And as the Shammai says, you put it in the wall facing the Shasharam. You don't want it in the wall of the Beis HaKise, facing the inside. And Rabbi Akiva and Beis Hillel both say you have to bring it in. The question is, do you stick it in the crevices? But where it might be, where nobody from the outside, no, none of the passers-by could possibly take it, but the mice might get to it. Or do you hold it somehow in your hand wrapped in your garment? Right, so that was the discussion by the Akiva and Beis Hillel. But both of them agreed in principle that you shouldn't bring your tefillin into the Beis HaKise Kavua. Right? A Beis HaKise Kavua really means something that has been used already, and at this point is designated for relieving oneself. So then the Gemara had a question, what's the status of, can a person enter the Beis, tefillin in the Beis HaKise Kavua if it's only Lahashtin Mayim? Now, there appears to be a machlokas that we've shown about this question. Now, what was that question? Are you actually being mashkin mayim when you're wearing the tefillin? Or are you simply bringing the tefillin into the Beis HaKise Kavua with you? And the concern is that maybe you're actually going to defecate. Now, the simple reading of the Gemara, you'll end up not only urinating, but defecating. The simple reading of the Gemara is that the question is, are you allowed to go in there to urinate? And you would be wearing the tefillin. You'd be wearing the tefillin. So I'm going to work with that interpretation, but it makes things a little bit difficult. The arithmetic, you can quote, doesn't quite add up in certain ways. Because the Gemara had a question. That was enough locus whether you're allowed to do that. Whether you could enter a Beis HaKise Kavua Lahashtin, wearing tefillin, right? Enter a already established bathroom, even though your intent is only to urinate. Here we may be talking about a Beis HaKise Arai. Right? Lahashtin Mayim doesn't mean that you're walking into an already existing Beis HaKise. It just means, are you allowed to urinate wearing the tefillin? So if you choose to urinate wearing the tefillin there, it's not a Beis HaKise Kavua. Not yet. Maybe once you've done it, it's a Beis HaKise Kavua. But right now, it's a Beis HaKise Arai. So it's a little bit of a different, it's a different question, but the Brisa says you're not allowed to do it. The Amoraim debated that point, whether or not you're allowed to enter a Beis HaKise Kavua to urinate. In between, we spoke about bringing tefillin, not defecating a tefillin, bringing them into a Beis HaKise Kavua. That's what's particular. So the Gemara, so that's what we've seen so far. Those are the, I'll call three pieces of data. Now we have a Braisa. Now the Gemara says the following. Rav Sheshes, I'm going to reread. Rava says in the name of Rav Sheshes, we don't pass like this Braisa, that lo yashkin bahemayim, that you can't urinate in your, wearing your tefillin, in a Beis HaKise Arai. You know, it's not a Beis HaKise Kavua that exists already. Why? The Beis Shammai, it's Beis Shammai's opinion. E Beis Hillel, if it's Beis Hillel's opinion, Hashta Beis HaKise Kavua Shari, we've already established that a fixed Beis HaKise is permitted, a Beis HaKise Kavua. Then, Beis HaKise Arai, mi boy, you need to tell us that a Beis HaKise, where are we going to be more lenient? At least right now, the Gemara says. In an already established Beis HaKise, or in one that is not a Beis HaKise, at least not yet. Presumably, you're going to be more lenient than one that is not yet. And yet, what would emerge if we were to accept this Bryce at face value, that lo yashin v'anayim, and we're going to call it, it means definitionally, a Beis HaKise Arai, a not yet Beis HaKise. So then, how could we have turned around in the previous situation and said that it is permissible to bring one's tefillin into a Beis HaKise Kavua? And I think that's how Rashi reads the Gemara. If you look at Rashi on the last Y line in the Rashi, it's on the top. Rashi references the Beis Hillel ha'amri le'el ochazin v'yado v'nichna. You are allowed to hold it in your hand and enter. So I'll admit, at first glance, if you explain it like Rashi, even at second glance, I don't understand what the Gemara's question is. If you told me that what we said earlier is that you're allowed to urinate wearing your tefillin in a Beis HaKise Kavua, then at least I would understand what was bothering the Gemara, that here you're saying you can't even weigh your tongue when you're urinating, not in the Beis HaKisei Kavua. But if all we said earlier is that you're allowed to take your tefillin off, but bring them into a Beis HaKisei Kavua, why would that prove that you should be able to urinate while actually wearing them? Now, there is a different way I think you maybe could read the Gemara, but it requires picking one of the two opinions earlier, which is if you say that it is permissible, the Gemara asked the question earlier, it is permissible, the Gemara asked, are you allowed to enter a Beis HaKisei Kavua, but only for the purposes of urinating? And there were two opinions in the Gemara. If you were to adopt the opinion that said, yes, then I understand this question. If you're telling me that you're allowed to enter a Beis HaKisei Kavua wearing a tefillin and urinate in them, then certainly a Beis HaKisei, all right, you should be able to wear your tefillin when urinating. And the Gemara, and that would make, at least I understand what the Gemara's question is. What I understand what Rava in the name of Rav Sheshit is saying. He's saying this Raisa cannot be in agreement with what we saw on the previous Avot. The only problem with my interpretation is that position is not explicitly attributed to Beis Hillel. Right? This would be the, you know, this would be an improper formulation. So I'm not really quite sure how to bridge this gap. Rashi doesn't explain. I haven't seen any other that we shown really explain either. Maybe I just didn't see it. But nonetheless, Rav Sheshit assumes that there would be a contradiction between the idea that you're allowed to bring your tefillin into a Beis HaKisei Kavua, even though you've taken them off, which Beis Shammai says you can, Beis Hillel says you can do, that's clear, and the Braisa that says Lo Yashtim Behemai, which I would have just said, it means you can't urinate when you're wearing them. It doesn't mean you can't take them off and have them with you. But that's what the Gemara, what he presents as a contradiction. So now the Gemara challenges this. Meisve. Dvarim shehitarti l'chakan, asarti l'chakan. This is very strange Braisa. I say strange, the Gemara doesn't even present it in one shot. There's a Braisa that says that the things that I permitted for you here, I prohibited you for there. And now, there's another line that's not here yet. The Gemara is going to quote it later. And the next line is, Zehu kavachomer she'in alav tshuva. This is total, it's one of the strangest Gemaras that we've seen in Gemara Bracha. This is a kavachomer to which there is no response. Now this is like, what does this mean here? So the way, what the Gemara understands is that Dvarim she'itarti l'chakan, Asarti l'hakan. There are things that I permitted here for you that I prohibit there. And you could ask me a kalvachomer, a question based upon a kalvachomer. That what I'm saying makes no sense. That I'm permitting you things here and I prohibit them there, but if I prohibit them there, I should certainly prohibit them here. And I really couldn't answer the kalvachomer, but there's a different reason why we make a distinction. This is, you read this Gemara, right, you have to read, the Gemara does not present it very clearly at the outset. The pieces only start to become clear as you go through the Gemara. But this is what the Braisa said, and this, which is, the things that I permitted here, I prohibit there. And you could ask me a kavachomer, and I really wouldn't have an answer for the kavachomer, because that's exactly the reverse of what you would expect. But there is a reason, separate, why the kavachomer is not relevant here. So the Gemara's assumption, though, was my love. What does it mean? Dvarim she'itarti l'chakan, asarti l'chakan. Doesn't it mean that it's talking about tefillin? Meaning things that I permitted with you tefillin in the Beis HaKisei Kavua, I prohibit for you in the Beis HaKisei Arai. Which, forgetting about the logic, why that's logical, why that works, that's against Rava Amar Rav Sheshes, right? Rava Amar Rav Sheshes said that you have to reject this Braisa, because it can't be in agreement with Beis Hillel on the previous page. But this Braisa that says the things that I permitted here, I prohibited there, would suggest, in fact, that these two Braisas go together. Beis Hillel's opinion that you can bring it someone from Beis HaKisei Kavua, and this Braisa that says you can't urinate in a Beis HaKisei, but call Beis HaKisei Rai wearing your tefillin, they are in fact consonants. They do go together. It's one opinion. And so Rabbi Rav Sheshes is just wrong. So the Gemara now says, no, you know what? One second. My love tefillin. So I amris b'shlama Beis Hillel. If you're going to say that it's all Beis Hillel's opinion, he tarti l'cha kan via Beis HaKisei kavua, and asarti l'chakan Beis HaKisei Arai. So if you want to say that this Braisa is in agreement with Beis Hillel earlier, the braisa of lo yashtin bahemayim, then the braisa of dvarim shi tarki l'chakan asarki l'chatan makes sense. But ele'i amris beishamai, if you're going to say that this braisa here, that lo yashtin bahemayim, that you can't bring the tefillin and urinate in them in the beis hakisei arai, if it's beishamai's opinion, then halo sharu v'lo midi. How can a braisa say dvarim shi tarki l'chakan asarki l'chatan? Beishamai prohibits bringing this tefillin into a beis hakisei kavua. And this braisa would have them prohibited bringing it into a beis hakisei arai. So this braisa cannot be a description of Beis Shammai's opinion if it's Beis Shammai, lo yashtim b'mayim. It has to be a description of Beis Hillel's opinion. And you have the seemingly contradictory notion that Beis Hillel permits bringing tefillin into a beis hakisei kavua, but do not permit bringing it into a beis hakisei arai. So the Gemara at least initially tries to push this aside and says, no, Ki Tanya hi, that braisa, dvarim shehitarti l'chakan, asarti l'chakan has nothing to do with tefillin. It's l'inyan tefach utzfachayim. It has to do with how much one is allowed to uncover oneself when going to the bathroom. Now, putting aside the details and the fact that our clothing have changed, so it makes this Gemara a little difficult to apply. This is in a time where people basically, everybody wore a called the equivalent of a dress or a skirt. In other words, you didn't have pants. So in order to relieve oneself, one had to lift it up as opposed to, you know, for at least for men, putting down their pants. So the Gemara says the following, that the things that I permitted here, I prohibited there, have to do with tefach and tefachayim, how much you uncover. The Tani Chada, there are two braises. One is kishehu nifna, when a person relieves oneself, megala la'achar of tefach ulefana tefachayim. They can uncover a tefach. They can leave a tefach uncovered. In the front, they can leave two tefachim uncovered. That's what one braisa says. The Tanya Ida, la'acharav tefach, ulefana veloklum. The other braisa says that behind oneself, on the rear end, one can uncover a tefach, and in the front, nothing. So one second, my love, Idi v'idi b'ish, it's both talking about a man, male anatomy, v'lokasha, kan l'gadolin, kan l'ketanin. So if a person, the assumption right now, and one of the Shonim actually asked this question, normally when a person defecates, they also urinate subsequent to that. But putting that question aside for the moment, the Gemara says that if a person's only defecating, they don't need to uncover themselves from, they can leave their front more covered. It's not a problem, as long as they uncover enough, behind. But if a person needs to urinate, so then they need clearance, and therefore they can uncover two tefachim. That's what the Gemara's suggestion is. So the distinction between these two braises is that when a man has to defecate versus when he has to urinate, so there are two different shiurim of how much he can, two different amounts that he can uncover. So dvarim shehitarti l'chakan, by kitanim, by urinating, asarti l'chakan. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. And that would be what the braisa means. So the Gemara says, no. If that's what the braisa meant, it's very loud, you know, you have these two braises that you do have to resolve one way or another, right? Two braises that talk about two different shiurim about how much a person can uncover when they're going to the bathroom. And I know maybe I didn't say this, but there's actually a very fundamental point here, aside from any of the details, which is that the value of tznius is a universal, it's a value that we assume universally. Even when a person is doing something that requires uncovering oneself, there's still a requirement of doing it in a manner that is as modest as possible. So, Shulchan Aruch, we'll talk about a person should not walk around naked in their house, even if nobody else is there, because you're in the presence of God. So there should be some sense of tzniut. So the Gemara says this resolution, which might work for the two braises of Shiurim, Tefach, and tefachayim versus nothing in tefach, doesn't work in the original braisa of dvarim shehitarti l'chakan asarti l'chakan, because now the Gemara quotes the second half of the braisa that I quoted to you earlier, which is ihachi hadikatani Allah, that which was taught on the braisa, zehu kavachom she'ena lav tshuva, my ena lav tshuva. What do you mean that it's a kavachomer that has no tshuva? What kavachomer is there between how much you uncover between one and the other? It's darker than milsa hachi. It's just human anatomy. The reason why, there's no reason why gedolim, desiccating, is not more chomer than urinating or vice versa. It's just what you need practically, how much you need to uncover. So So what's the Kal V'Chomer that I would have made that really has no tshuva, that can't stand as the Kal V'Chomer? In other words, what the Gemara is saying is that the Braisa really says, Dvarim she'itarti l'chakan, asarti l'chakan, and then there's a comment on that Braisa, v'zehu Kal V'Chomer she'ino lav tshuva. The Gemara has only revealed that to us now. And it says that if you're trying to forget what you do with the Braisa of Tepach V'Chayim, you can't say the Braisa of Dvarim she'itarti l'chakan, asarti l'chakan, is talking about how much you reveal, because nobody would have thought to make a Kal V'Chomer from one to the other. Right? It's not, urinating and defecating, one's not more Kal V'Chomer than the other. It's just in this case, literally, it's functionally speaking, anatomically speaking, what do you need to uncover? So the Gemara says, Ela lav, it must be tefillin, utsyufta the Rava Amar Rav Sheshes tsyufta. The Gemara says, yes. Rava Amar Rav Sheshes is wrong. This braisa is, in fact, beis hillel shita. You're not allowed to urinate wearing the tefillin, even though it's the beis hakisei arai. Where you are, I mean, you can't enter to urinate wearing the tefillin in the beis hakisei arai, but a beis hakisei kavua, you could bring this tefillin into. So the Gemara now says, okay, mikom akom, kasha. Firstly, what do you do with the two braises that contradict one another? Hash, 1 second. No, I'm sorry. I skipped over a part. Nobody called me on this. The tizbara, I forgot, my eye skipped, which is really the previous topic. The tizbara, ibikatanim, if in fact the person is entering to urinate, la'acharav tefach lamali, why do you need anything uncovered from behind? So the Gemara says no, ela idi v'idi b'gdolim, both braises are talking about defecating, v'lokasha haba'ish haba'isha. So a man and a woman require different amounts that they need to uncover based upon their anatomical orientation. So then the Gemara says, Ihachi, hadak tani ala, zeo kavar chomer she'en alav tshuva, ma'en alav tshuva, dark semel sechesh achi. In other words, that's just the difference between male and female anatomy. So why would you think to make the kavar chomer, that a man is more chomer, a woman is more chomer, there's nothing to do with anything. That's essentially the same question as before, which is there's no link whatsoever between, there's no reason to have made a kavar chomer in this braisa if it's talking about shiurim that one may uncover, the amount of a person's body they can uncover to relieve themselves. So now the Gemara says, Ela lav tefillin, or satyufta. So now the Gemara says, Mikol makom tasha. Tashta beis hakisei kavua shari, beis hakisei rai lo kol sheken. So question remains. Okay, so this is a good Kal V'Chomer. In other words, what was bothering Rava Amar Rav Sheshes is a good question, which is, if Beis Hillel permits Beis Hakisei Kavua on Chafkim Amar Aleph, how can they prohibit Beis Hakisei Arai? That's the question. So the Gemara says that Hachikamah, Beis Hakisei Kavua Deleka Nitzotzos Shari, Beis Hakisei Arai Deika Nitzotzos Asri. So the concern, again, so here the Gemara really sounds like we're talking about actually urinating in both places, despite the fact that on the previous Amud, when we spoke about a Beis Hakisei Kavua that they still permitted, it was taking your tefillin off. And it wasn't for urinating purposes. But for some reason, this line in the Gemara really sounds like what we were permitting on Chafkim Amud Aleph was to urinate in a Beis Hakisei Kavua, wearing the tefillin, which is odd. So the Gemara says that the difference between a Beis HaKisei Kavua and a Beis HaKisei Arai is really for a man, is the position in which they urinate. The concern, in a Beis HaKisei Arai, you urinate standing up. In a Beis HaKisei Kavua, you sit down already. Now, when you urinate standing up, so then the concern is that, which is normal, anybody who's dealt with conflicts between males and females in kenneling bathrooms and their cleanliness understands that when a man urinates standing up, it doesn't always land perfectly, and there are nitzotzos at the end. There may be things that scatter at any point, actually, and wind up, in this case, on his feet. Now, what's the concern that he might have drops of urine on his feet? This is going to sound strange to you, probably, but the concern is that people will suspect that he's a krus shafcha. If he doesn't, you know, if there's, that his penis was partially cut off, and that's why he dribbles the urine in this strange way. And the concern will be that a krus shafcha can't really have children, and they'll think that his children are mamzerim. That's what the Gemara said. The Gemara talks about the need to be mishafshef, to sort of, what's that? So I have to be honest with you. I suspect that this was not as, you know, I don't know. The Gemara says you have to be, it's a mitzvah mishafshef. You have to make sure you scrub off any thing. And that's the concern of having your tefillin at that particular time. So, which by the way ironically makes more sense if you're holding the tefillin than if you're wearing the tefillin. I'm not going to really deal with how do you sort out this question of holding versus, because our brisa sounds like lo yashin b'hanayim, unless it means really lo yashin b'hanayim means you can't urinate while holding the tefillin, right? That's the only I think it makes sense at this point. But the Gemara says that if you're sitting down to urinate, you don't have that problem. It's not going to be on your feet, just by position. Whereas when you're standing up, there's a concern of mitzotos. There's a mitzvah of the shafshef. You know, whether that's really the reason that I described, that's what Rashi quotes, that's what the Gemara says. They're going to be choshesh for his children on Amzera. They'll be concerned that he's a kush shafcha, and therefore it's not really his children, because the assumption is a kush shafcha is one who cannot actually father children. So therefore, in other words, even though a beis hakisei kavua, in theory, is more impure or more unclean, nonetheless, with this particular detail, has nothing to do with which is more stringent, which is more lenient. It's just that as a pragmatic issue, that's why we distinguish between the two. So that's what the Gemara says again, that beis hakisei kavua, the lecha nitzotzo shari, beis hakisei rai dik nitzotzo asri. So now the Gemara says, ihachi, amai ein alav tshuva, tshuva ma'al yisahi. So the Gemara says, the way I read the Gemara, is what do you mean? So there's really a good answer to the Kal v'Chomer, but it's not really some answer to the Kal v'Chomer. It's just saying that the whole Kal v'Chomer is irrelevant. There's often when you answer a Kal v'Chomer, if I say A is more stringent than B, and you say, no, I can show you that B is more stringent than A. That's the way you might answer a Kal v'Chomer, typically. That's how you respond against it. Nobody's responding to that Kal v'Chomer here. But the Gemara says, but there is a way around the problem. There's a way around the question. So the Gemara says that Hachi Kamar Ham Milsa Tasty Bitoras Taima Velo Tasty Le Bakavachomer. The Iashi Le Bitoras Kavachomer, so Kavachomer Shadal Chuba.
You have to explain the difference between a permanent Beis HaKisei versus an ad hoc Beis HaKisei using Svara is to explain why the circumstances are different. Because if you were to invoke the Kavachomer, there would be no response to Kavachomer because it's backwards. You would have expected, based upon a Kal v'Chomer, you would expect it to be more stringent than the Beis HaKisei Kavua, and less stringent than the Beis HaKisei Arai. And instead, it turns out that it's the reverse here, but it has nothing to do with one being Kal and one being Chomer. It's just simply a question of, again, anatomical or mechanical considerations. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. I wrote Stanley Kanes. That was to be a terrible pun. I'm glad to be finished with at least that particular piece. It's kind of hard to work through the details.
Yeah, but it's a little bit of an indictment question.
Yeah.
You said that if, in fact, he is a crook, shop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and which means whatever it takes, you can't have children.
Right.
A shash that is children.
Right.
Hashash is one story. Is it possible that somebody that we would declare as children on the period, or is this just a hashash?
No, I think it's just a hashash. I think it's a, the fact that he
declaring somebody a mom there is
no correct. It's a concern that people are going to think murmur about the. About his children. I don't think it's all a halachic consideration, because the fact that there are nitzotzos doesn't, as we understand very well, doesn't mean he's a kosher shafa. Right? Right. Rashi says, the Gemara Yoma says that the second Y line, Rashi, Shema Yirai to kosher shafa, Menimsa Motzi Laza Bana Shem Amzeru. Right? That's why you can't hold a tefillin in your hand when you're doing it. Okay.
Next subject.
We have various things. It some ways it doesn't get this any easier, but some it's a little easier. Well, yeah, a lot of them happen to be concentrated right here, actually. There are a few pieces scattered shots, but we have like three dozen dealing with, it's important, dealing with tefillin, kriya shema, tefillah, and humans performing various kinds of bodily functions, which generally speaking relate to bathroom or sexual relations. I mean, the truth is there's a kind of, I don't say irony, it's not the word, But it, philosophically speaking, it really touches upon a much more deeper point. An Aruch HaShulchan that I like to quote, it's the first Aruch HaShulchan. He quotes a Gemara, a Medrash, that says that there are three things in which human beings are like Malchai Asharis and three things which human beings are like animals. So three ways that people like Malchai Asharis one of them is the Holchem Bekoma Kufa, they walk upright. They are Medabrim Belashon HaKodesh. And I forget what the third one is. And that's what, how we like angels. And then, the way we like Behema is that we're Ochlam Shosim Behema. We're Parim Viravim Kibahema. We reproduce like animals. And Motsim Rei Kibahema. Right? We relieve ourselves like animals do. And the Aruch HaShulchan continues and says that the challenge of a Torah Jew is to be a little bit more like the angels and a little bit less like the animals. So in a sense, what you're dealing with here in the Gemara is really sort of the polar opposites of a human experience. On the one hand, you're talking about, you know, the ultimate Dvaran Shebekdusha of Tfilin and Kriya Shema and Tfil on the one hand. And how does that interact when we have to engage in the aspect of ourselves that are more like the rest of creation? So the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan, Harotze Likanes Lesudas Keva Mahalech Asara Pa'amin Dal Ramos Dal Pa'amin Yur Ramos Aviyifne. So a person, and again we spoke about this last week, that some of this we might do less because when you go to the bathroom, meant if you have to go to the bathroom with the meal, so you basically have to go to the outhouse. It's like a more major interruption. So they probably thought about this more. They also, probably for them, was harder to get up, especially if you were doing Heseba. Right? For us, so we have a bathroom, you know, two doors down the hall, and it's less of a deal, although we still probably would perceive it as something of an interruption. I don't think anybody looks askance at it. So the Gemara says that first you should either walk, you know, ten times four amos back and forth, or four times ten amos, you know, in order, which is true, by the way. I mean, exercise and will. Well, you make them walk 40 amos, you make them go to the bathroom.
Yeah, just walk around.
Okay, I didn't know that.
No one's clean, you don't have to go to the bathroom.
Well, that's of course true, but that is of course true until you're 5 minutes into the car ride, it's like, oh, we need to go to the bathroom. But I think because our bathrooms are so accessible, we think about this question less of being Bodhi the Collins. We wait till we really feel it, as opposed to sort of thinking maybe there's some sensation there we're not paying attention to. So the Gemara says that you should do this in case you need to go to the bathroom before you eat. Amar Rav Yitzchak, hanichnas l'sudas keva, if you're entering to eat a full meal, choleit tefillah v'achar kach nichnas. You are supposed to take your tefillin off, and then eat, but you take it off. You take it off before you enter the suda. You don't take your tefillin in with you. Uplig the rabchia, the rabchia, manichon al shulchano b'chein hadul. The rabchia says, no, you take it in. You leave it next to you on the table. And that's what, so that when you bench, you can put your tefillin back on. In other words, it's ready for you. Now, what's the concern about wearing tefillin while you eat? Why should that really be an issue? So, Rashi says, because we're afraid that you're going to get drunk. And then to be drunk, when getting drunk and your tefillin is disrespectful to the tefillin. No, that's Ranan is here. He would appreciate it runs in the family. I think it was Ranan, your great uncle, who made that claim about Rashi being a vintner. Because there's a tshuva of Rashi where this woman Leah asked about how do you tax vineyards. So I know that Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik has said he has gone to France. He said that's not an area where vines grow. The soil is not suitable for it. There's no evidence that Leah was Rashi's mother, and it's clear that Jews didn't typically have vineyards because otherwise they wouldn't have been a Shaila. They would have known how to use tax. So Rashi was probably not a vintner. Anyway, okay. Sorry, I had to.
This Gemara also makes sense according to the Aruch HaShulchan's dichotomy that if you're wearing tefillin during
you eat it. Correct. Now, correct. I would have said that, but I think that's correct also. Rashi offers a different reason than that, but yes, I think it does fit nicely with the Aruch HaShulchan. So the Gemara now continues, Ad Emas, when do you put the tone back on? Amar Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak at Man Bracha. And once Bracha Samazon time comes, so the truth is, I don't know if it's for this reason, But you, my sense, you'll see it often that yeshivish guys or anybody who wears a hat, they'll go right before benching and they'll go to put their hat on. That is kind of like, which is, I think, appropriate. You know, if you take off your jacket during the meal, you're still wearing your tie. If you take everything off, you could put it back on for benching, but certainly if you took off your jacket, so come benching, that would be, in a sense, it's recognizing that we're now shifting from the eating back into a mode of greater kedusha. Well, I think the point is, if you got drunk, you're not going to be put back on. But most people are not getting drunk during the meal. But Rashi is saying the concern is, you know, in the case, because we know it never happens except for the rarest of occasions that people get drunk. So that's why. And I don't think it means that they always got drunk. It wasn't, I'm getting drunk, let me take my tefillin off. It's that we'd rather, you know, did not happen. So then they diluted their wine heavily. It would seem that we don't know for sure, but it would seem that they couldn't drink the water straight because it would have killed them. And so the alcohol in the wine was enough to do so. I think we've spoken about this before. They are Rishonim would claim, but it's physically, essentially impossible that their wines were much stronger than ours, because the Gemara says they were later on assessed that they could have a debate whether or not you can make a Bori Pre Geffen, or Geffen. On wine undiluted, on Yayin Chai. Today, nobody would, I dilute my wine sometimes for Abdullah if I have to drive somewhere, and I just would rather have even less alcohol. But most people don't dilute their wine today. So some of the Rishonim who already knew they weren't diluting their wine said their wines were Chazak Yishalanim. That's not true. Because if you look at our table wines, the table wines now typically, you know, the real wines are 12, 13, 14%. 18% is about the maximum you can get unless you distill it. So their wines, if anything, were probably actually less strong than ours, and they diluted them anywhere between, you know, 3 parts water to 5 or 6 parts water, something like that, if you wish. Exactly. But, maybe 2 parts to 5 parts water. So theirs were less alcoholic, but they couldn't drink. They couldn't drink the water for the most part. If they drank the wine straight, they would have been, you know, buzzed, if not, you know, drunk all day. So they diluted it. But obviously, they certainly could have become drunk. The Gemara now says, we have one brisa that says, Sur Adam Tfilav in Ma'osa Bafar Kasusa. If a person has an Afar Kasusa, Rashi says is the Sudo Sharosha. It's some type of a garment. So if you, I don't know, you had some compartment in your head covering. So, or you, I don't know if you take, maybe Chasa Shalom, they took it off while they were eating. I don't know. But he had a head covering and you wrap up your tefillin in it and you wrap up your money in it. So that's one brisa. And the other brisa says, you're not allowed to put the money in there. So the question is, why does one brisa say you're allowed to, along with your tefillin, Rashi says next to it, not literally, like two different compartments. One, you're allowed to use it, you put the money in there, and one, you can't use it. So the answer is, lo kasha, hada asmene, hada lo asmene. It depends whether or not you designated this covering, this thing, as meant to be permanently for the tefillin, if that's its purpose. Why? The Amar of Chista, Haistudra de Tzvillin, the Asmene Lemaitse Beit Tzvillin. If you have a bag, we'll call it Tzvillin Zekel, you designate it for putting your Tzvillin in. Sor Beit Tzvillin, once you put Tzvillin in it, also Lemaitse Beit Pshiti. You're not allowed to put anything else in it because the bag has the status of a Tashmish Kedusha. You're not allowed to use it for anything else. However,
as opposed to
a talis bag, correct, which has no kedusha, because the talis doesn't have kedusha. Talis is what we call tashmishei mitzvah. When you're using the talis, you're not allowed to use it for other things, but once you're done with the talis, let's say the talis has fallen apart, and you take the tzitzis off, you can throw them into the garbage. They have no kedusha whatsoever.
In your talis, you're saying before that the bag, some sort of, you know,
but not a talis bag.
So
the question there is whether or not it's really miyuchad for that. The question is how many coverings for that particular din I don't know for sure. What would your, if you always put your tefillin bag inside the talis bag, would that mean the talis bag is a tashmish for kedusha as well? Right? If you normally don't, even because you, as Ruchit is about to say, Rav Chisda says that if sorbet, you designate it and you use it, it's also lemeitzer b'pshite. Asmenei velo sorbet. Sorbet velo asmenei. If either you used it to put the tefillin, but that wasn't intended as its purpose, you don't intend it to be its regular usage. Or if you designated it for the purpose of your tefillin, but you haven't yet once wrapped tefillin in it, so then, shari lemeitzer b'zuzet. Then you're allowed to put money in there because it doesn't, according to Rav Chisda, and this is actually Rava's position, that hazmanat lav milsahi, that merely designating something to use to contain a mitzvah, a davar shel kedusha, does not give it kedusha. In those hazmanah doesn't count. The Gemara is about to quote Abaye, who disagrees, but if, let's say you knit tachrichim for a mace. Let's say you make tachrichim for a specific mace. Is it asa, but you haven't used it yet. It's asa bana. Rava says, no, it's not. Hazmanah lav milsahi. The mere fact that it was designated for that person doesn't make it asa bana. You have to actually put the mace in it. Only then it becomes asur b'hana. And assuming you're putting the mace in it, to leave the mace in it. Let's say you're temporarily putting the mace in. I don't know why we do the tachlichen. But let's say there's some clothing that you put temporarily put the mace in, but it wasn't intended for the mace per se, and you don't intend to leave the mace there. Then once you take the mace out, no, you can use that for whatever you want. But you have to both, the tachlichen has to be put on the mace to be intended. You don't have to be made for the same tachlichen. But once you put it on the mace, with the intent of leaving it there, that is considered hasmana and using it for the mace, and it's asubhana forever. So that's what Rava said. That's what Chisda says, and that's Rava's position. And then the Gemara says, we'll conclude with this, ulabai da omar, hasmana milsahi, asmine, if you designate it, according to Abai, afal gad velo sarbe, even though you didn't actually put the tefillin, it's already asur, you're not allowed to put your money in it. But sarbe, if you put tefillin in this bag, I asmine is asur, but ilo asmine lo. If you actually hadn't designated it, you put it in this one, even for Abaye, it doesn't have Kedusha yet, and you can use the bag for whatever you want to use it. Okay. Any questions? I know. Okay.